at the grocery store is often processed and packaged by someone at a large facility. Labor experts say these workers endure fast-paced and demanding conditions, and there's renewed debate in Washington, D.C. about permanently adjusting line speed limits for processing equipment. Mike Moen has a story in South Dakota.
Worker safety at U.S. meatpacking plants is back at the forefront with a congressional plan to permanently increase line speeds for processing pork and poultry. Supporters say companies need certainty, but labor voices in South Dakota worry about more injuries. Adjustments to line speed rules are often the result of USDA actions, depending on who's in the White House. Both Trump administrations have prioritized faster speeds. The GOP-led bill in Congress would create a permanent framework to ensure plants can maintain full operational capacity. B.J. Motley leads the union representing workers at South Dakota's Smithfield Foods plant. He's skeptical of the idea, saying conditions are already taxing.
So the worker's basically on the line 8 hours, you know, with a little break here, a little break there, but it's continuously run now. And I think that's putting a lot more pressure on employees in their workstations.
He says the timing is also bad, with increased immigration enforcement affecting staffing. Motley says that puts remaining workers at risk for injury with repetitive motions to keep up with faster production standards. The bill's sponsor says processors would have to meet certain criteria before speeding things up. He argues the plan would bring U.S. meat and poultry firms closer to global competitiveness. And supporters say these companies and farmers would no longer be at the mercy of inconsistent rules. But Motley is part of the opposition questioning the motives behind these plans.
It's all about greed, because you're not losing any production anywhere.
In 2021, a federal court struck down the USDA's rule eliminating line speed limits, a plan pursued by the first Trump administration. The agency later allowed faster speeds at a limited number of plants while it studied the effects. Worker advocates questioned the validity of January study results, which found no direct link between increased speeds and injury risks. Backers of the proposed bill say it's time to codify changes into law and move away from administrative rulemaking. This is Mike Moen for Greater Dakota News Service.
Summer is not over yet, and medical experts are reminding folks to continue to drink water to stay hydrated and protect their heart's health. Eric Galatas has more in Colorado.
With the official end of summer less than 2 weeks away, medical experts are encouraging Coloradans to keep drinking water, not just to beat the heat, but to safeguard their heart health. Dr. Manisha Kochar is a cardiologist with National Jewish Health in Denver. She says the water you drink makes its way into your blood, and when you're dehydrated, your blood actually becomes thicker.
And if you don't have adequate blood volume, your heart has to work a lot harder to pump blood, and by pumping harder, it increases the demand for oxygen and puts more stress on your heart.
The amount of water needed to stay hydrated varies between people, but on average aim to drink around 8 cups per day. Take sips throughout the day instead of gulping large amounts of water at a time, which can put stress on your kidneys. Drinking too much water without replenishing electrolytes can be dangerous. Kochar notes the average American diet comes with plenty of electrolytes, but if you've been sweating and haven't eaten anything in a while, a pretzel or salt tablet should do the trick. Limiting beverages that act as diuretics, which cause your body's cells to release fluids, can also help you stay hydrated.
Caffeinated beverages and alcoholic beverages cause your body to lose more fluid, and so by limiting the amount of caffeine and alcohol in the day, you're not fighting with having to hydrate more.
If possible, Kochar recommends limiting the time you spend outside, especially when the Colorado sun is high in the sky, typically between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. Being outside in excessive heat creates stress throughout your body.
Your body has to make all of the organs function more efficiently, the liver, the kidneys, the heart, and if you're not well hydrated, you're going to suffer heat stroke a lot quicker and have a lower threshold to go into heat stroke.
This is Eric Galatas for the Colorado News Connection.
You are listening to a fall membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and Mel Gertov. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Eric Tagadoff, Antonia Gonzalez, Edwin J. Vieira, Eric Galatas, and Mike Moen. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our fall fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $45,000 by September 20th. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for the Global Citizen International Digest.
Welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. It's critical commentary on foreign affairs from a human interest perspective. The opinions expressed in the following segment are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. Trump, drugs, and war with Venezuela. Trump's war on wind power and climate change accelerates, and opposition to Netanyahu's war plan looks insufficient. First, Trump, drugs, and war with Venezuela. The sinking of a boat allegedly carrying drugs from Venezuela has turned out to have ominous political and military implications. President Trump has taken the entirely illegal and irrational step of authorizing the U.S. military to use shoot-to-kill orders against suspected drug smugglers. As we have seen in Los Angeles and Washington, D.C., Trump is expanding the traditional role of the military and common-sense notions of national security by converting soldiers into policemen, smugglers into enemy combatants, and drug trafficking into state terrorism. Trump's order gives soldiers license to kill drug dealers on site, just as they did in the attack on the Venezuelan boat. A former Homeland Security official in the Obama administration, Jay Johnson, said, quote, "Here the president appears to be invoking his amorphous constitutional authority to kill low-level drug couriers on the high seas, with no due process, arrest, or trial." He added, "Viewed in isolation, labeling drug cartels terrorists and invoking the national interests to use the U.S. military to summarily kill low-level drug couriers is pretty extreme," unquote. Trump may also be using the boat incident to take aim at Venezuela's leadership. As usual, Trump and company have offered no details on the incident, where the attack occurred, how they knew the boat carried drugs and was headed to a U.S. port, and why, contrary to earlier U.S. intelligence findings, it believes the Venezuelan government controls the alleged drug trafficker gang that was killed. This cover-up coincides, perhaps not coincidentally, with a U.S. military buildup in the Caribbean that might be the prelude to an attack on Venezuela. The White House press secretary has prepared the way, saying, quote, "The Maduro regime is not the legitimate government of Venezuela. It is a narco-terror cartel." Those words typically come from an imperial presidency, which Trump seems to embrace with his justification for renaming the Defense Department the Department of War. He says the U.S. hasn't won a war since World War II, that it has held back from winning because the country, quote, "decided to go woke." Now, presumably, we're going to start winning wars, and the Caribbean may look to Trump like an easy win. A U.S. buildup there has invasion written all over it. 8 warships, several surveillance planes, and 1 attack submarine. If the U.S. attacks, you can expect that Trump will justify it as a counterterrorism operation, when in fact it will be designed to bring about regime change, the removal of President Nicolas Maduro, who has been in Trump's crosshairs since Trump's first term. All it may take to touch off a U.S. attack, in defense of national interests, of course, is an incident such as the buzzing of a Navy-guided missile destroyer by 2 Venezuelan jets last week. Remember the Bay of Pigs, Tonkin Bay, and 9/11? We've seen this play before. Nor can we omit another Trump motive, using an attack on Venezuela as a warning to Mexico, which is grappling with a response should Trump carry out past threats to intervene with U.S. forces in pursuit of the drug cartels. Trump's war on wind power and climate change accelerates. Not content to end subsidies to and federal funding of wind power, authorized under Joe Biden, the Trump administration has enlisted various agencies not normally involved with energy issues to derail offshore wind power entirely. The New York Times reports that Health and Human Services, for example, has been ordered to study, quote, whether wind turbines are emitting electromagnetic fields that could harm human health. And the Defense Department is, quote, probing whether the projects could pose risks to national security. Then there's the Energy Department's latest finding that, quote, wind and solar energy infrastructure is essentially worthless when it is dark outside and the wind is not blowing. Evidently, no one thought about storage batteries. You can bet what these departments will conclude from their studies, considering that Trump has already ordered a stop to construction of a $4 billion wind farm off the coast of Rhode Island because of dubious national security concerns. All this because Donald Trump decided in one of his most ridiculous recent pronouncements that wind power harms birds and landscapes. This report comes as over 85 American and international scientists condemned a Trump administration report from the Climate Working Group of the Department of Energy that calls the threat of climate change overblown, saying the analysis is riddled with errors, misrepresentations, and cherry-picked data to fit the president's political agenda. No one should doubt, say the scientists, that human-caused climate change is real, is already producing potentially dangerous impacts, and that humanity is on track for a geologically enormous amount of warming. No one knows what socioeconomic impacts of this warming will be. It should also be clear that the Department of Energy's report's approach to undermining scientific evidence mirrors tactics previously employed by the tobacco industry to create artificial doubt. Unquote. What the Department of Energy should have done, the scientists say, is read the vetted, authoritative climate reports of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and the National Climate Assessment. But the DOE won't, because they believe facts are the enemy of truth. And here's a late entry into bad environmental news from the Trump administration. It intends to turn off the two climate monitoring satellites that have been providing data for decades, arguing incorrectly that they cost too much to maintain. Actually, former NASA officials say the satellites are operating perfectly and cost little to maintain. Another nail in the coffin of environmental protection. This is one program, however, that a bipartisan vote in Congress may just keep alive. Opposition to Netanyahu's war plans may be insufficient. The New York Times reported on September 2nd that in opposition to Prime Minister Netanyahu, quote, several leading figures in the military, the Mossad spy agency, and the government are calling instead for a return to the phased approach to resolving the conflict, beginning with a temporary truce. Mr. Netanyahu and other senior ministers now favor a more elusive deal that aims to free all the remaining hostages at once and end the war on terms set by Israel, terms that Hamas has so far rejected. The phased approach would free about half the hostages initially in exchange for a number of Palestinian prisoners. Those opposing Netanyahu's stance include the military chief of staff, the head of Israel's Mossad spy agency, Mr. Netanyahu's national security advisor, and the foreign minister. It now, however, looks like Netanyahu is going ahead with an all-out siege of Gaza City, and he has Trump on his side. On September 7th, Trump said, quote, "The Israelis have accepted my terms. It is time for Hamas to accept as well." His terms are Netanyahu's. Give up the hostages, cease fire, and end the war. Trump's final warning, his quote, was nearly identical to that of Israel's defense minister, who said, quote, "Release the hostages and put down your weapons, or Gaza will be ruined and you will be destroyed." A prisoner exchange, by the way, may be more complicated than we might think. A report in The Guardian cites an Israeli military database which indicates that only about a quarter of the roughly 6,000 Palestinians in detention are actually fighters. Quote, "Those jailed for long periods without charge or trial include medical workers, teachers, civil servants, media workers, writers, sick and disabled people, and children." In other news, Putin clarifies his war aims, disregarding Trump. If there was any doubt about Vladimir Putin's intentions in the war with Ukraine, he boiled them down to this, quote, "It seems to me that if common sense prevails, it will be possible to agree on an acceptable solution to end this conflict. If not, then we will have to resolve all our tasks militarily." And he's going about the latter with a vengeance, striking Ukraine with unprecedented bombing in recent days, hitting not only civilian targets, but also, for the first time, a Ukrainian government building. In short, Putin is saying that Ukraine must either accept defeat and concede territory or prepare for ceaseless attacks. There's no room for Russia-Ukraine peace talks. More than that, Putin is pressuring NATO not to consider putting troops in Ukraine after a ceasefire. Sending drones over Polish territory, where they were just shot down, shows how far Putin is prepared to go to force Ukraine's capitulation with NATO's tacit consent. Putin knows exactly what he's doing, daring Trump to act on his professed disappointment with Putin and impose sanctions. And Trump remains in compliance, most recently ordering major cuts in support of European security programs that are directed at the Russian threat. Allied officials are reportedly confounded by the cuts, but they shouldn't be surprised. They are just the latest administration appeasement of the Russians. A risky secret U.S. operation in North Korea goes awry. The Times reports on a Trump-approved secret mission by Navy SEALs into North Korea, smack in the middle of nuclear talks with Kim Jong-un in 2019. The mission was to plant an electronic device that would eavesdrop on Kim's communications. But the SEALs never got that far. A North Korean boat discovered them after they landed, and the SEALs killed all the Koreans, who turned out to be fishermen. Trump never disclosed the mission to Congress. Had he done so, someone might have reminded him of the hostage crisis during Jimmy Carter's administration, or the legal requirement of disclosure to Congress, or the high risk that discovery might not only scotch nuclear talks with North Korea, but set off a nuclear crisis. The Times investigation gives fascinating details about the extraordinary difficulty of the mission. Left unclear is the target. Where were the SEALs going to plant the electronic device? In retrospect, the mission seems like a desperate, overly risky attempt to gain intelligence when all previous efforts had failed. It could easily have led to a major strategic disaster. Since Trump rarely admits to failure, he has disavowed any knowledge of the mission. But if he did not have knowledge, how to explain why such a sensitive mission could have gone forward without the president's approval? Here are two updates from my previous reporting. First, India-U.S. relations have hit rock bottom, most recently shown when Prime Minister Narendra Modi embraced Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin in Beijing. Even Donald Trump had to acknowledge this abject failure of his diplomacy. "Looks like we've lost India and Russia to deepest, darkest China," Trump wrote on Truth Social. "May they have a long and prosperous future together." The attempt at sarcasm can't hide the fact that he is responsible for bringing those three together. To be sure, India's sudden closeness to China is most likely a matter of convenience, given their significant differences. But for Trump to say that the U.S. and India still have a special relationship shows how far out of touch he is. The second update concerns U.S.-South Korea relations. Tensions between the two countries were high enough, but the Trump administration added to them when ICE agents arrested around 300 Korean workers, along with nearly 200 others, in a raid on a Hyundai battery plant in Georgia. The administration claims the workers were there illegally and were keeping jobs from Americans. The Koreans all appear to have had visas that did not allow for technical work. Nevertheless, the administration now has to justify encouraging South Korean industrial giants like Hyundai, Samsung, and LG to invest in the U.S., yet imposing severe restrictions on visas for skilled workers. Both sides now are talking about reviewing the visa situation to allow Koreans to teach U.S. workers at the Hyundai plant. Finally, I couldn't resist this tidbit from China. When Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping were together recently for a summit meeting in Tianjin, Putin was caught on a hot mic quipping to Xi that they might seek immortality by having organ transplants. Reuters published the clip, but China's official TV station forced Reuters to delete and destroy it. If we find out that either of those leaders is living well into their 90s, we now know why. That's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening, and take good care.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Hannah Francis. I am joined by Underscore Native News reporter Lyric Aquino.
My name is Lyric Aquino. I'm originally from Cleveland, Ohio. I come from the Pueblo of Okeawenge with Jicarilla Apache lineage and Isleta Pueblo lineage as well. I've been with Underscore for about 2 months now. I have 4 stories out. Go read them. Super excited. And I'm also a Report for America Corps member. I have a bachelor's degree in journalism and anthropology, and I have a master's degree from NYU in science, health, and environmental reporting. I'm also a huge nerd, and I'm very proud of that. And that's a little bit about me.
Thank you so much. It's so nice to meet you.
It's so great to meet you.
So your article is titled Tribal Radio Stations Hit Hard by Federal Broadcasting Cuts. KWSO in Warm Springs is set to lose 40% of its budget, while other rural tribal stations across the U.S., which play essential roles in disseminating information, such as emergency alerts and natural disaster updates, are facing similarly large shortfalls. You know, this is part of a huge national story of, like, so many people feeling the effects of CPB. So first, could you maybe outline a little bit of just what's happening with CPB for those who may not know?
Yeah. So at the time when I wrote this article, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting had just lost $1 billion in funding. And that funding is given to, you know, so many different radio stations. And so since then, as of, I believe, a couple weeks ago, most of the staff will stop working on September 30th, with only a few staff members working into the year. So with this funding cut, that took away $8 million in funds for 36 tribal radio stations. And so when you're getting funding from the Corporate for Public Broadcasting, I mean, you do have certain responsibilities, but without that funding, you know, a lot of these tribes are wondering how they're going to operate their radio stations, which are really critical for their citizens.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, 40% is a huge portion of a station's budget. So how is this going to impact the communities that KWSO of Warm Springs, they already serve?
Yeah, so when I was talking to KWSO, they said that their budget that they received from CPB went into funding two of their staff members. And so they said that by any and all means, they're going to find a way to keep them. But so that means that they might have to take away from other programming that they pay for. That might take away from news coverage that they cover. And they really try to touch on mental health services in health programming. And some of that might have to go away as well. We're also looking at delays in alerts, and those alerts are really critical, especially for rural communities. A lot of Indigenous people don't have access to broadband, which I think is, you know, it's something that I talked about in my story, but I don't think a lot of people realize that reliable internet access is not found throughout reservations in a lot of tribal lands. So if we're seeing interruptions in these news stories, it could be detrimental. And we saw a lot of that during the pandemic.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. And then you said that this is cutting $8 million to 36 different tribal radio stations.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this specific problem at KWSO is just amplified across the country. Can you tell me about the impacts nationwide in all these different communities?
Yeah, I think it goes back to a little bit what I was saying before, where, you know, we are going to see issues with weather alerts. I mean, we're going to see issues with missing and murdered Indigenous people alerts, with turquoise alerts. And I think we're also going to see a lack of access to news, which is so, so important. I mean, you know, I touched on it a little bit before when we saw this during the pandemic, but the radio was how so many people were getting news about how the virus was spreading, how to prevent it from spreading within their homes. You know, what do they need to do to keep themselves safe? And I think, you know, while I hope that we don't have anything, you know, like the global pandemic coming back, it's still critical to getting out that information. So we're going to see a lot of Indigenous people, you know, losing access to that knowledge and to that wealth of information. And I think it also goes back to severing community ties a little bit. I mean, KWSO also reports on local feel-good stories and basketball games and community members. And so some of those stories are going to have to go away. And we're going to see that throughout the nation. And I think that's so sad. You know, not only are you not getting the news and information that you need, but you're losing those community ties as well. And, you know, that's something that I don't think we can afford.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there any hopes of finding funding elsewhere?
So when I talked about this a little bit, people were kind of up in the air. So right now I'm unsure because I think they're unsure. But hopefully, you know, as I continue reporting on this story, you know, we see some more hope going out there. People have discussed getting funding from other nonprofits and different, you know, funders, but it's looking like every station might have to do it for themselves. However, I know that Loris Taylor, who is the CEO for Native Public Media, took a survey, and she is really out here trying to make sure that these tribal radio stations are getting access to what they need. In the survey, they asked how many radio stations will be able to survive a couple weeks, a couple months, a couple years. And so I think with that information, she said she was looking towards seeing how some funding can be found somewhere.
Nice. Yeah. She also said, Loris Taylor mentioned that, like, this really mirrors what's happening with funding within tribal communities as well. Could you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, I definitely agree, you know, that we are seeing a lot of mirroring happening with funding cuts. I only have four stories up at Underscore because I just started, but the story that just came out today, Jared and I partnered on again, it was about the Coqual Wellness Centers down in Coos Bay in Eugene, and how with federal budget cuts in the big beautiful bill, we are going to see some issues with access to healthcare throughout Indian country. And so we're looking at cuts to healthcare, you know, cuts to Medicaid. We're looking at cuts to tribal radio, and we're looking at cuts to education and tribal colleges. So it's coming in on all fronts, and it can be very, very overwhelming. And it's something that Native people are trying to navigate while also just trying to live. And so I think when, you know, Loris is mentioning how we're seeing this, you know, impact tribal communities, it's not just about access and like losing these resources, it's about also navigating mental health and trying to really, you know, put yourself in these shoes of an already marginalized group of people who are losing these resources that are so critical and so important.
You've been listening to an interview with Underscore Native News reporter Lyric Aquino about her latest articles about cuts to CPB funding affecting rural Native radio projects. For KBOO News in Depth, I'm Hannah Frank.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from 988 Oregon, a public service helping those who are stressed, worried, or just feeling down when they call or text 988. Support is confidential, and call takers are real people in Oregon who speak with understanding